You're now listening to the See Me CNC Printed 3D Podcast with hosts John Olealofsson, Steve Pardetti-Wygant, and Casey Hendrickson.
Hey everybody, Casey Hendrickson here again. I got John and I got Steve from See Me CNC. This is the See Me CNC Printed 3D Podcast, Episode 2. All right, guys, we've had some requests. They want to know a little bit more about you guys individually. So who wants to go first?
I'll jump on that. This is Steve, a.k.a. Pardetti.
Yeah, Pardetti over here.
That's my nickname.
All right, man. So give us a little background on yourself and how you got into the 3D printing industry anyway.
Yeah, I've been designing and making all kinds of automation and production parts for a very long time. Basically, I'd followed it, the market we're in, the kind of the DIY maker crowd. I followed the RepRap project that Adrian Boyer started, and I always thought about making one to help my machining business out. Now, this is 2007, 8, 9, somewhere in there. That's when I was looking at using it to build more business, so I could print prototypes to show people, and then I could go machine more parts. You know, I didn't think about actually making the machine at that time.
So you kind of like the same aspect that a lot of people are getting into it now is they're realizing that the prototyping of products that they want to make is much cheaper with a 3D printer as opposed to going through conventional means. That's
yeah,
how you
and,
started.
You know, a key thing is that the technology's intellectual property or patents have led up many years ago on the key aspects of being able to make our own designs and build on other people's designs. So that's what opened the doors up for this whole thing to get started in the first place at the price point at which we sell. John will probably elaborate on that some, but I think that, you know, it's 2011. We were building up and up and things were going pretty good in the machining business. And what happened was, well, bottom kind of dropped out partially again. Mm-hmm. And so I pulled John in and we were talking about it. I said, you know, 3D printers or something interesting. And I showed him the RepRap project and John is like open source madman. He's like, I don't know how to describe it.
As he's sitting here with his iPhone.
He's a hardcore open source guy. just look at his tattoo.
Yeah, I outed you, man.
As he's sitting here with an iPhone.
He's so open source, he's got an iPhone.
Yeah, I kid him about that. But
oh, yeah.
You know, so he really opened my eyes up, John Oley here, to being in the community and involved and where I never really turned the page. I followed it, but I didn't like dig into the open side of it. Now, I'd always been interested since the 90s in like OpenCV, that's called Open Computer Vision, a technology Intel developed. Anyways, we talked about it and you know, my little business, everybody in it worked so hard to get where we're at. And it is hard to find good people. Mm-hmm. I just said, I'm going to risk everything in our bank account and we're going to make 3D printers. So, because it just fit.
Now,
and
because, I mean, you did machining, injection molding,
yep,
stuff like that. Do you guys still do that on the side or is that more to support the 3D printing manufacturing?
All we do now is make 3D printers.
Okay.
And that was... Since about 2012, we haven't looked for outside work, I call it. You know, we're not a job shop anymore. We are a dedicated 3D printer manufacturer, and we're climbing right up the ladder.
So, John, how did you link up with Steve? And he's already said that, you know, he was using him for prototyping and things like that, and you just you kind of opened him up to the community of it.
Yeah, so
being
it was,
the open source,
I think
pro
it was,
Apple iPhone Macintosh guy that you are.
All right, let's get this straight. This is my first iPhone ever.
Hey, look, I, full disclosure, okay, I got the note for sitting here.
You had an iPhone last time I was here. What's this?
No, the last time you were here, I had this. No, you're right.
No.
Okay, I thought I had this the last time by
tables
now.
But
no, it was shortly after you guys left, because now I came from an HTC Evo, and I went to the iPhone 5, and I did it for my work. Because there's so many microphones and things like that plugged in, so it's easy to do on-the-street interviews or news breaks or something like that with the iPhone.
Yep.
And I had it for 2 days, and I wanted to kill myself after having that thing. My old HTC Evo, which was dying on me at the time, was more powerful than the iPhone 5. And so when I got this, I'm thrilled.
I stood in line waiting for the Evo when it came out.
I get it.
I rocked about five or six of those things until they just wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then did the HTC ones, and now I got the iPhone 6. Yeah.
So what'd you get the iPhone for? Well, we'll get back to your life story now. Everybody needs to figure out why you have the iPhone now. Because it's so not you.
He said, if you can't beat him, join him. But I'm doing really good with my Droid Motorola.
You're hearing Sean Hannity on News Talk 95.3.
Right, back to the life story. We'll stop embarrassing you enough.
So back about 2011, I think it was April, I was actually working a third shift job as a machinist over in Elkhart at a company. And I got four kids and a family and bills to pay. So where I was working before that, things were pretty slow again there. You know, the economy pretty sucked around here. So I took that third shift job, keeping the bills paid, keeping the wife happy. And I was actually fishing a lot because it was a third shift job. So sure. I'd get up in the morning and I'd go down and I'd go fishing all day. And I was thinking about finding something that wasn't working from like 7 at night till 2 and 3 in the morning, and cruising Craigslist. And I found an ad for a machinist looking for a Mazak programmer and setup guy. And that happened to be Steve's first Craigslist post he ever posted, and I answered it. I think he said it. He put the ad up, and 5 minutes later, I was texting him from the bank of the river where I was fishing. And
so like, hey, this was pretty cool.
So that's how we started, and I was setting up machines, and, you know, we were working that summer, 2011, and doing some pretty cool stuff. But, yeah, like Steve said, you know, the work slowed up. A couple of the good customers kind of had to walk away because they were done doing what they were doing, or brought a lot of stuff in their own house. So he came out and said he's always wanted to do some sort of a desktop CNC machine, like a router or a Swiss lathe is one that we keep talking about. Some sort of desktop manufacturing.
You know, a lathe, you let me know.
I can't tell you why I like complicated things, but here we are.
Yeah.
So yeah, he came out and he's like, what about a 3D printer? I said, a 3D water? What's this? What's a 3D printer? And so he told me to go check out reprap.org, and I think it took about 8 minutes or so or less before I said, oh, yeah, this is what we got to do. Okay. Been a big Linux geek, worked on Ubuntu, did some other open source software stuff. But just been a hacker, you know, mechanical hacker, playing with machines and tools and just about anything. I used to get in trouble all the time for taking stuff apart when I'd get a present for Christmas and seeing where the wires went and what the motors did. And so using that and then the open source roots that I got and gained from, you know, learning how open source works and why it was good, and the opportunity of taking all the tools and stuff that Steve has at the shop and producing some really cool 3D printers with it is kind of what excited me the most about it.
So, I mean, Steve looked at this and he knew that he had to change the direction of his company. He was willing to basically risk it all at that point. Because, I mean, it wasn't not necessarily risking it all, because it was, you knew that it was going away anyway. It just seemed like the bottom was...
I was risking it all from the aspect of, well, I won't have any more employees. Steve is going to be around. I might be standing in that shop all by myself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go anywhere. But it's all about the team. It's about people. It's not all only about me. Yeah. It's just...
we were all a little more conscious of who left the light switch on in the shop back then.
We were. Yeah, that's true.
Wish my wife would get on board with that.
Yeah.
That helped me out a lot. So Steve said, all right, we got it. We have a direction here. And he had an idea, but your open source background with Linux and everything else, I mean, you just automatically understood the community and said, all right, this is something we got to do. And so you guys decided, let's start making 3D printers. So how long did it take before you guys made that decision, before you had your first fully functional 3D printer? I mean, how many fails were on the way, that sort of thing?
It was a few months.
I think that was end of July. Yeah. He came out in the shop and first said the words 3D printer. So July 2011. By September, we had our crowdfunding campaign up and running.
Indiegogo campaign.
And within 30 days, we had all 29 injection molds done, and we had a functional 3D printer.
Yeah, I didn't know you guys crowdsourced.
We were actually the second 3D printer company to have a successful crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo.
Really?
Yeah, you look up the H1 on Indiegogo. That's where we launched from, and it was successful, but not incredibly huge dollar-wise, but it was a great way to get the word out about the new direction we were headed.
Now, how did you guys get noticed on Indiegogo? Because that's like, I've done an Indiegogo Indiegogo campaign before, and that's always one of the things. You get bombarded now. I don't know if it was that way back then in 2011. You get bombarded with everybody. Oh, we'll market your campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how did you guys get noticed and really start developing that, you know, that marketing strategy, I guess, on Indiegogo?
So it was pretty cool. Like, actually, I didn't even know about Indiegogo either before. I had heard about Kickstarter, but not Indiegogo. And we actually applied for Kickstarter. But back then, things were different. And we got rejected from a Kickstarter campaign. Looking back on things, though, that first H1 machine is probably better that we didn't do a little better with a Kickstarter.
Yeah, there was a lot of parts in that kit.
You got to start somewhere. It's part of our history. I'm glad we don't make that machine anymore, though. Steve said after we had the Kickstarter turn us down, then he said, well, there's this other site called Indiegogo, and we were working on that campaign for a while, kind of got pictures up and video and, you know, all the about us and the perks and rewards. And we launched that. I think it was about a week after it had launched. I'm pretty active in the nerdy stuff and, you know, all the forums and blogs and online stuff. And so I had been emailing everybody like Hackaday and Engadget and those guys and saying, hey, check us out. We're going to do something cool here. Help us out. Mm-hmm. And Engadget put us on their Insert Coin series.
Oh, okay.
And I was sitting at home.
That's big.
I had just came home from the shop. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night because we were working really late, working on the tooling and stuff for the project. And I just sat down for dinner with my wife, and I just happened to have my laptop on the table, and I opened it up, and we had a really crappy website with a really crappy little hit counter down on the bottom of it. And I looked at it, and it said like 14,000, and I about threw my dinner across the room.
This is about a week afterwards, right?
Week after the campaign.
He like called me, right, when he did that. He's like, dude, you better look at our website.
So we went from having like 140 views on our website to 14,000.
Wow.
It was
in an hour from driving home from the shop.
Amazing.
And so that
was hard
cool.
to raise money in crowdfunding. Like, I think people out there think it's kind of easy. You just have to have a good idea. I mean, it's rough. I mean, there's a lot of competition now, too.
Oh, it's easy to start a crowdfunding campaign. It's hard to actually
to get the money
fulfill finish it. One. That's, no, it's easy to get the money, too.
Is it? Because I didn't get any. Because I got no money at all.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. We'll make you feel too bad, but it's at least it seems
like. I know, I'm going to hire you guys
next time. Realize that you got to manual. If you're going to manufacture the stuff, they don't realize how much financially and, you know, if you don't have the equipment, you're going to have to hire somebody to build it for you. Yeah. It's just really expensive to do it. And our big advantage is, like John said, you know, he's sitting here, he's a social media whiz. I mean, that's a big reason where we're at is a lot of the social media work he did, too. So there's a whole lot of things. It's not just one thing, this or that. I'm really good at making injection molds or tools or whatever. It's a combination. When the combination is all there, things happen for you like it's happening for us. So
you
it's
guys,
really cool.
You guys transitioned away from that H1. You've obviously got the Orion in the row stock now, and you're working on the Aeris and things like that. So, I mean, how did you get to that point with the current product line?
We were, it was like January that year, I think, right? It was like 2012, I think.
February, Johan Rochal out in Seattle posted some files and showed off his first work on a DeltaBot style 3D printer. And I was like, oh, that's cool looking.
Check this out. And I was
brought
checking
it in,
out.
Showing it to Steve, and we were both like,
man, some of those parts look like it'll be a headache to hold the tolerance on. And
it looked really cool. We were both like, that thing is awesome looking, but I don't quite see how that's going to work yet.
Okay. So many, many months later, we had our second printer. It was called the Piranha.
Yeah.
It was a little box, and it was never came to reality. It was a couple weeks away from being actually totally done.
We were working on it.
And, Ole here walks in the office and says, you see how many people are interested in the Deltas? And I went out there and I'm like, get a hold of this guy and, you know, see if he cares if we turn this into a kit. We're the first company to turn the Delta style printer into a kit and sell it.
Okay.
And once John got a hold of Johan and Johan's like, yeah, whatever you want to do with it. So again, we took a little bit of what he did and then we put us into the next design. So while when he came back in and said Johan emailed him, I literally scooted the entire Piranha project over to the side.
It just went in the dumpster pretty much.
The world didn't need another box printer.
They all look the same.
And it's very difficult to stand out, be first, do it well. You know, all these requirements to do a good job and be successful. But being first in something is very important and doing a good job. So I got to work right away on the mechanical design of the first Rostock Max that we did. And John was working, you know, social media, the guys with electronics. He was doing a lot of programming himself, like hacking up code and doing stuff. So it worked out really well after about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, it was about 2.5, 3 weeks. We went from that aha moment of we got to do this to we had a machine running and then just dialing in all the little bugs here and there.
Sure. That's pretty impressive. So, I mean, you know, because this is one of the questions, too, that I see a lot on the forums. People are looking to dive into 3D printing is, you know, what style should I get? And you guys obviously went with the Delta style because it was kind of new and sexy, but you've stuck with it. So obviously, you know, you see something in that design that you feel is beneficial over the, you know, the box styles that you see out there. So when somebody comes to you guys and says, you know, what's the benefit versus, you know, a box or a Delta style, I mean, what do you kind of tell them?
The biggest thing is, like, you think of 3D printing, you think it's, you know, this futuristic kind of crazy Star Trek thing, right? Yeah. So when you look at a microwave and you're waiting for that typical ding sound to be done and your print's done, you can't see anything because it's in the box. It's kind of boring. But you look at a Delta 3D printer and you see that thing moving around and all the towers going up and down and the head swinging around. It's just, there's that fascination from 5 years old to 85 years old. They all walk up and they just want to sit there and stare at the machine. It inspires that whole kind of mythical beast of a machine.
Had my septic go down on me a couple of weeks ago, and the guys that came out and were working on it, you know, eventually they stopped focusing on what they were doing, and they, you know, did one of them little double take things over there. The heck is that? It's like, it's a 3D printer. And one guy was like, I was wondering if that's what it was. And, you know, I had, I think, one of the TARDIS light switch things that I've been printing up on my 3D printer for people lately. And, you know, naturally, this guy's huge into Minecraft. His kid's huge into Minecraft. He's like, can you do Minecraft? I'm like, dude, there's a ton of Minecraft stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is. I mean, it's one of those impact things. You do see it, and people kind of, they just want to know what it is. It's futuristic. Looks like a robot, that sort of thing. And they get kind of curious.
I mean, that was a lot of our draw to it, was something different. It was totally, outside the box, right? Yeah. I mean, it was just mind-blowing to watch it work. And then, you know, we were building the prototype, and we didn't even know whether it was going to work or not. We got it built, and then the more we started using it and playing around and calibrating and tuning them, we started to realize that there were a lot of actual mechanical advantages to using that style gantry instead of a, you know, Cartesian machine. Like, the bed doesn't move, which is a lot of print fails on other machines that have a bed that actually moves the print around as it's printing. We don't have that. And the bed's rigidly mounted. It's not riding around on little rails or anything like that. You know, the extruder style, they call it a Bowden, so it's a lot lighter. It can move faster. The bigger build volumes for pretty small sizes on your desk. A lot of those things we kind of learned as we went. We weren't sure why. We just knew it had to be done.
So when you guys finally have your first Rostock out, okay, you're breaking in, you're the Delta guys out there, there's still, I mean, obviously you had the big machines that were more well-known at the time, and you've got a bunch of upstarts and everything else. How did you guys stand out and continue to be successful up to this point?
Well,
it's not your winning personality, guys. It's not.
So, you know, a lot of people ask us that because we kind of snuck underneath a lot of the radar in the 3D printing industry, and I think a lot of it is we didn't spend a whole bunch of money trying to convince people how cool we were or how hip we were. We focused on building really good machines and innovating, you know, incremental improvements. There's a change that happens every week on everything we do.
You guys have a lot of updates.
Sometimes it can be frustrating. I guess I can see that side of it where you think you got the next greatest thing, but then next week something else comes out. But we try to make sure everything's, you know, user upgradable or backwards compatible. If we come up with a new design for something, we make sure it will, as best as we can, fit all of our old machines out there all the way back to the original machines. But the biggest thing that has kind of separated us from the herd, I guess, is the customer service and the support. You know, we're constantly evolving that, making sure that we're there. We can answer a phone. We can answer an email. You know, they're friends, not customers.
You know, go ahead. That's
our forum, like, if you look at the group on our forum, I mean, they're
really
an amazing group of people. Amazing. And so to that, you know, that's another part of it. There isn't any one thing here. That's like how we're doing it or the community. It's the whole, everything's right. And John said it best, you know, we're focused on, Not trying to make the cheapest thing out there, not the most expensive. A lot of value in our product. And we do that because everybody in our shop loves and cares about what they're doing.
I get a lot of comments too when people ask me, you know, how much is the machine? And I tell them, and like, wow, that's cheaper than I thought. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, it's about the cost of a laptop, you know, but you have a manufacturing facility basically in your house. So it's, I think people are still used to the whole $5,000 to $7,000
mm-hmm.
sort of thing that it was, you know, several years ago. And it's just obviously the price keeps coming
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
That's and, a big part of our, like, when we go to all these 3D printing shows, you know, they see a $3,500, $4,000 3D printer. And they walk up to us and see a $1,300 printer. It's kind of hard to break that mental barrier of, well, that $1,300 machine can't be nearly as good as that $3,000 right. machine.
But it is. So then you have materials.
Yeah.
Materials also, we talked a little bit about this in the last episode. Materials make the print sometimes too. And ABS used to be the big one. Now it seems like everybody's using PLA
yep.
to get comfortable with and to start with. And most of the new exotics are kind of based on PLA. So kind of talk about that and where we're going with some of the materials out there now.
Well, there's all the different things they're doing with PLA. There's Bronsfeld, stainless steel, magnetic, conductive. So, you know, we joked around about needing a printed circuit board. Well, we could print a circuit board, sort of. And, you know, it's just really cool. It seems like every week there's something new they're sticking into it to make a new one. But there's also the Tolman brand of filaments out there. And that's a higher end, higher quality PET, which is like your pop bottle material.
Mm-hmm.
The nylons.
A lot of the more engineering grade
plastics. Engineering grade plastics.
What Tolman focuses on.
And he's got some food safe stuff and everything else too. So
yeah.
Which is always mm-hmm. nice. So you guys showed me this really cool copper.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at the shop, what, week
the
ago?
Copper fill,
two
yeah.
weeks ago. I mean, that was, I think a lot of people are looking at these materials, like you hear like metallic this, metallic that.
Yeah.
It's not really shiny. This stuff,
it pops
I mean,
out
it
pretty
looked,
good.
It looked
yeah.
like copper. Like, I mean, yeah, it was really
like
neat
it,
looking. Yeah.
yeah.
Of course, it's not, but, you know, it looks that way. And I know that a lot of people have started to go for like this, this metal fusing onto some of their prints and things like that. But,
yep.
I mean, as fast as that's coming out, that's like already obsolete because now you can print with this stuff.
Yeah.
So, Ninja Flex, been a source of frustration in my life. It has. I love this stuff.
You know, it's
you print slower with it.
You got to print really slow.
There's a little mod you do in our extruder
right.
that allows you to do it. So you got to slow down with it though because it's so spongy. You know, it's really soft.
It's very
Ninja
soft.
Ninja Flex is a TPU TPE flexible. Think of like O-ring trying to. Shove an O-ring through a garden hose is
yeah.
how we try and extrude the Ninja Flex. So it's more difficult on our style machines for sure, but it is something that all desktop 3D printers suffer from is printing with rubber materials.
But it's really cool. And I think what's ended up happening now is the companies that have made it, they've got this new stuff and they said, all right, people want this product,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it might be a little bit, more of a learning curve, if you will, to get used to it and get it to work the way that you really want to. So they've started coming out with some new stuff. So there's some really cool new options when it comes to flexible.
Yeah, and yep. by the way, when you get to printing with that Ninja Flex, it's incredibly strong. And you'll really raise your eyebrows when you try mm-hmm. to break a print in half or smash it. It'll bounce right back.
So what's the new stuff? Like, is there going to be modifications for machines for some of this new stuff? Because is it a PLA base or no?
There is a flexible PLA coming out of Europe right now, and then obviously the Asian countries are copying that. It's pretty similar to the Ninja Flex that's made over there in the USA. Same difficulties. So what is actually happening is they're finding that you can run a lot more rigid material. So
mm-hmm.
we have the new Semi-Flex, which is stiffer than the regular Ninja Flex, so it works better in the machines. And that has improved the printability of it a lot. So they're finding that you can still stiffen up the material, print with it, and it's going to still be flexible and rubber-like, but it's not going to be as difficult to print with.
Well, and you showed me an example of it when I was at your guys'
yep.
Shop not too long ago. I mean, the stuff is very flexible. Just, I mean, you squeeze it and bend it and
yep.
just like anything else.
What did you show him, John?
We have some samples of some semi-flex, and we printed some octopuses and
sweet
shoes and vases and like
now,
insoles.
Okay, when the wife sees shoes, I'm in trouble at that point.
Well, I mean, you know, the shoe thing for me is my daughter. I want to print my daughter's shoes so I can stop buying her shoes because, you know, kids grow like a weed and that sort of thing.
Just you'll be able to print her shoes on the Orion.
Yep, exactly. So, all right, so you guys now, you make your printers, you're moving along, and what's the most questionable thing you guys have printed on your... I think we've all had this moment, right, where we're like, I'm going to print this, and I probably shouldn't. So, like, what's the most questionable or unsavory print that you have done?
So mine, I guess the one I'll talk about is...
The one you'll talk about.
Okay, could you explain further, right?
So there's this one really unique
do that at home,
artistic Arnold? Sculpture that's really famous in the desktop 3D printing world. It's called the Pink Panther Lady. Mm-hmm. Go out and look for it, guys.
The Pink Panther Lady.
So I'm upstairs. It was right after we had the, we didn't even have the Rostock yet. It was still the H1. And I was upstairs in my office at home, my little nerd lab, and I'm printing out this giant Pink Panther Lady. And it's a bust of a woman, mm-hmm. obviously. And she doesn't have any clothes on. So one of our sons came in and said, Mom,
oh, no.
Dad's printing a new wife.
True story.
So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
They haven't quite advanced to that yet. We're hoping soon.
Yeah, so on the part daddy, I started printing one of those life-size.
Larger than life-size.
I stopped before I got up very high.
Now, the part daddy, again, is how many feet tall?
It stands 17 feet tall. It can print 9.5 feet tall.
Okay.
So it is made to print, you know, life-size objects besides Pink Panther ladies. PLA material.
Now, is that where your unsavory print came from? Is the part dad, or do you print something else?
No, I don't really have... We have interesting requests. But
prints for some friends.
If you guys printed... obviously, there's some personal stuff that could be done, but I think if you printed off some celebrities or something like that, you scan them in, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, so
we're at the Burbank.
We're at the Burbank Hollywood 3D Printer World Show, and I was answering a lot of questions there. Amazing people from Hollywood,
Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers, all kinds of prop houses.
A couple of Disney guys.
You know, I had one person entertain. They said, would you entertain bringing this machine somewhere and printing something on it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing bad, but like a fictional character, maybe an X-Man.
Movie characters or props.
They wouldn't say, I said, well, I'll entertain it. Just email me and let me know. And so that, you know, Hollywood-wise, that was really fun. So it's hard to say, you know, what kind of request you might get out of.
You've seen, like, you know, the statues and things like that, like the Terminator or some of the old horror movies. I mean, those things sell for a lot of money. I mean, it'd be kind of cool if you could do it with a 3D printer and save some cash, but still make some money doing it with the part daddy. That would be kind of neat.
Yeah, a print that we took across the country. John showed it to a lot of spaces across the country. I printed my son, Sam, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, a full life-size statue of an 11-year-old, and people love it. They, Materials Girl had her picture taken by it at Burbank. All kinds of kids love it, adults. Everybody just loves it when they see this thing, a life-size statue. They got to get their picture taken with it. They get asked how long it takes, 24 hours. That's all it took to print a person-sized statue. You know, it's really exciting. Questionable things I printed. I'll be honest here. I don't know. I think John's got me beat in the questionable market there.
That's because you're not saying anything. All right. So you guys got a pretty cool little event coming up here locally for the people who are going to listen to this podcast before it happens. Tell us a little bit about it.
So the Midwest Rep Rap Festival is March 20th, 21st, and 2nd at the Elkhart County 4-H Fairgrounds here in Goshen. This will be the third year for it. The first year, me and a couple buddies on the Rep Rap IRC channels and forums were talking about just getting together one weekend and hanging out, pizza and beer, playing with printers. And so it went from a couple guys hanging out at my garage to a couple dozen guys hanging out at our shop to we don't have enough space for a couple hundred guys. We had 300 people the first year.
Yep.
Including people from as far away as Czech Republic flew in to come hang out.
Oh, wow.
And so it kind of showed that there's a big community of these people that really want to just get together and have a fun weekend. Last year, second year, we rented the fairgrounds out, and we had about 1,500 to 1,600 people show up.
It was hopping last year. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
It was pretty amazing. It's really awesome. So what is it about? It's primarily a big gathering of people that are into 3D printers that just kind of want their own weekend to come play and hang out. Secondly to that is we try and get all of the local media to cover the event and get people in there to learn about 3D printing. It's a great place for kids, parents, teachers, whoever, to get hands-on experience, ask questions, look at all the different types of printers, materials, what you can actually print with it. There's a lot less Christmas ornaments and doodads printed at the Midwest Rep Rap Fest than normal.
It's pretty cool stuff.
It's really cool. Yeah.
You got some of the teachers that use the printers in their schools and everything else to come in. And
yep.
I mean, so it's really neat to see what they're doing with their students with your machines and all of that. I mean, it really is a lot of fun.
We got a lot of the tech journals, things like Make Magazine, Hackaday.
Hackaday was out there, yeah.
The Ben Heck Show, The Verge. Just got an email confirmation that The Verge is going to be here year. So a lot of
episode
lot of
3 of this podcast is going to be done there, by the way.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, we think that's going to work. And you guys had some pretty exciting news recently, too. You saw one of your machines pop up somewhere.
Yeah.
Kind of by accident you guys saw this. Tell us about it.
It was pretty bummed out. We didn't get a go when we were in Burbank. We were just got home from Burbank, actually, and somebody posted a message and said, hey, check this out. And we followed the link, watched the video. Turns out Jim Henson's Creature Shop's using our 3D printers.
That is awesome. That's
cool. It's really exciting. It's absolutely amazing who some of our customers are, too.
And you had no idea, just
no
popped up
a video thing. No.
I just got a ding on my phone. I looked at it, and it was a Facebook message from one of our forum guys, and he said, check this out. I watched the video. It was like 13 and a half minutes into this video before I finally realized what was going on, and bam, there's our Rostock Max, and they're printing props.
That's pretty cool. Do you guys want to talk about the other one that involved a certain world leader, or no?
Yeah, we'll save that for next month.
Okay, we'll save it for next month. There we go. We can do that. Not a problem.
And one more thing. I got to do this. Oli, tell them how much it is to come to the Midwest Rep Rap Festival this year.
All you got to do is come. It's free.
And it's a lot of fun. Plus, we'll be out there. And
every kind of printer made there just about.
And you guys got speakers and you got, you know, little things like that, too. I mean, it really is a blast. And by the way, when I went last year with my daughter and my wife, that was the first time they had actually really seen the community.
Yep.
And so for them, it was very eye-opening in what printers could do and what you could do with them. And, of course, some of the other stuff that people have come up with to kind of go along with 3D printing, you know, that stuff's there. And so it really opened a lot of people's eyes. So if you're interested in 3D printing or even similar type things, I mean, being able to go out there to the Midwest Rep Rap Festival is going to be pretty informative and pretty cool to hang out with some awesome people, too.
Yep, come out and hang out.
Sounds good. Anything else before we get out of here, guys?
Nope.
All right. It's episode 2. We got John. We got Steve, the part daddy. We got to get that out there every time now, right?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. We've got John and Steve, the part daddy again. SeeMeCNC.com. That is SeeMeCNC.com. This has been the See Me CNC Printed 3D Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hendrickson. We'll see you for episode 3 at the Midwest Rep Rap Festival. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the See Me CNC Printed 3D Podcast. To learn more about See Me CNC's lineup of 3D printers and accessories, visit SeeMeCNC.com.